Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol-free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast. Today, I have a beautiful guest from Galway who is not in Galway anymore, who is in beautiful France, in southern France, one of my favourite places in the whole wide world. It's Sinead Anderson. You are 3.5 years off the booze. Welcome, Sinead. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Olivia. I'm delighted to be here. I'm a huge, huge fan of the podcast. I listen all the time. So I'm a little bit awestruck to be here, actually. So
it's only us. We're only having a little chat. that lots of people will listen to. But isn't it gorgeous? Sorry, this is a little aside, but like it's such a beautiful selfless thing, you know, to be able to help people on their journey. And you know, I get so many messages all the time saying, oh my god, I resonate with that person so much, and they, by resonating with somebody's story, it kind of helps people see themselves in others, and if they can do it, we can do it. And I know that's certainly how kind of I suppose I did it. Well, it was more kind of Quitlet back when I did it. But it you know, it really helps people by sharing our story. So thank you, because it's a very generous thing to be able to do.
Amazing. Yeah, no problems. And that totally is something that I believe, if you don't see it, you can't be it. You know, it's by seeing people doing things that you think you can't do, and then going, oh, actually, she did it. I can do it. I can give it a go at least. And it's, you know, it's changing the stories we tell ourselves in our heads, you know, oh, I couldn't do that, or, you know, I'm no good at that, and all that kind of thing. And but yeah, if you don't see it, you can't be it.
Sinead. So, yeah. That is profound. I've even written it down. I'm going to put that on the wall somewhere. You can't see it, you can't be it. And that's the core thing. That these are one of our tools, right, to stay off the booze, visualizing ourselves. So how do we walk? How do we talk? How do we go into that party? I was at a 40th on Saturday night, and I'm going to regret saying this, but it was very loud music. But I can visualize myself being there. I can have great crack. Do you know what I mean? So like visualization is a key part of all of this. You know, and it's a very wise thing, you know. And you said there about the stories we tell ourselves. So I'm reading a lot of Marissa Peer at the minute, and she has a great book called The Lies We Tell. So, no, Tell Yourself Better Lies. So like, I'm going to start flat out lying to myself. You know, you are 5'11", Olivia. I'm not sure that would work. Anyway, Sinead, do you want to give us a little introduction to yourself, where you are, what maybe, how you moved to France, all that kind of stuff as well?
Yep. So I'm from Galway, as you said, from Furbo, which is the first village in Connemara. I then went to college, dropped out, did lots of stuff. And then I ended up working in the bank in Dublin, met my husband, who's English. He was one of our clients. And then we got married, and we had 2 years in Dublin with no summer. So we thought, well, what the hell? Let's go to France for a year and see what happens. So we learned how to speak French. We moved to France, and we never came back. So that's 23 years ago.
Oh my God.
It's amazing, yeah. So we have two kids now. They're 18 and 20, and they were born here in France. They're French now, which is lovely. So they have all three passports, which is great for them for traveling. Not so great for their mother, but I miss them a lot. So that's great. And then 3.5 years ago, we just decided, well, my husband decided to give up drinking, and then 2 weeks later, I was like, well, my drinking buddy gave up drinking, so I think I'll stop too. And that was it. It was a long journey with booze. I was a really, really shy child. I remember hiding behind my mom's skirts when we went to family reunions and all of that kind of thing. So I just kind of thought, well, the booze will give me a bit of confidence, make me more fun, make me more funny, more outgoing. And so, yeah, as a teenager, I started drinking cider and vodka and, all the things that your friends drink. And yeah, then in my kind of college, early 20s, vomiting a lot, strategic vomiting so I could drink more, that kind of thing. I remember being, roused by bouncers on the toilet floors in nightclubs, as you do, but you just carry on. There seems to be some sort of a way you can fool you, like you were saying, tell your brain better lies, tell yourself lies, oh, it's fine, I don't have a problem, it's okay. This is what everybody else is doing. This is what young people do. This is what Irish people do. This is, what shy people do. And so, so it just carried on. And then, it was the Celtic Tiger. We're out all the time, weekends away. Dublin was a place to be, parties all the time. Then we moved here and it was just, rosé barbecues in the afternoons, children's birthday parties. I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day and someone was talking about, champagne at children's birthday parties. That's what we had. It was like, geez, it's crazy. But then you start thinking, my kids were teenagers. You're thinking, God, you want to teach them better habits. So, like I was saying, if you don't see it, you can't be it. So it's monkey see, monkey do. And so it was like, God, how can we teach them to be more responsible or more level-headed about it if we're not? So yeah, and then my hormones were changing. I'm in my late 40s now, so I didn't really have a taste for it, so I kind of stopped. So then I couldn't drink red wine, so I was like, well, that's okay, I'll just have white and rosé. It was like, but I did, I worked for a wine company in between, so then, well, it's research, that's all great. I can write all this drinking off as work. And yeah, and then just it came at the perfect time when Matt said, I want to stop. I was like, actually, do you know what? That's a brilliant idea. And
Amazing.
so that was that.
And you've raised a couple of things that I want to get really get into. And I see this thread so much, and I am that thread also. But you said you were a really shy child, right? I don't think I was a shy child. I was a shy teenager. But like, okay, probably the nature of teenagers, right, is that they're very awkward and very shy. And maybe because we didn't understand it, or like it's the discomfort that's created by being ourselves. So this could be teenage years, it could be 20 years later in our 30s or 40s. And that's the work that we have to do, isn't it? We have to get comfortable with feeling discomfort in ourselves. Like, walking into a pub in Galway City, I'm sure you did. I did plenty of drinking in Galway, let me tell you that. But like, what do you do to get the butterflies away, or to like, stop your face going red, which I did a lot of, or what the, so you'll have a wee vodka or you'll have a wee whatever, and there wasn't that kind of space. I think we know more about teenagers now. We know more maybe about like psychological development of teenagers. Like we know more as a society, so we can kind of scaffold kids more, so we don't, we can alleviate some of that kind of shyness. Plus, I think kids do a lot more now in terms of extracurricular that builds up their confidence, so they might need that kind of stuff as well. But definitely, that's a very common theme. It's that we drink to get rid of the shyness or the social anxiety or to help with connection. Yeah. And that was your story too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And even I, because I did my life coaching course with you, but then I did the addiction coaching course afterwards, and which was fascinating. But they talk about the dis-ease. So it's a disease, but it's the dis-ease, and that's what people get addicted to things to get rid of that dis-ease. So it's social anxiety or whatever it is. And so therefore they reach for alcohol or drugs or exercise or food or whatever it is, but to kind of suppress that feeling of, as you said, the butterflies in your stomach.
Which is like, I'd love a few butterflies now. I'm such an old hag at this stage. I never get them because I'm used to everything. So a bit like a few butterflies or a bit of going red might be nice. You just can't embarrass me now at this stage. But like, oh, and you said something else that it really resonated with me. So before you moved to France, you learned how to speak French. So you prepared. Right? You envisioned maybe some bumps in the road around language. So you did a preparation. So I think, doesn't that a segue well into, okay, I foresee myself giving up booze. So I need to learn the language of giving up booze. So the language of refusal, the language of comfort within myself. This, like we said, I think the theme of this might be the lies that we tell ourselves better lies, So, in your view, if you could look back to kind of 3 years ago, based on the prep you'd done moving to France, would you have prepped more for giving up the booze?
Yes, probably. And
Okay.
it's something that I've done because I've coached a few people in giving up booze since I did the coaching course. And it's, before a night out, even you stand in front of the mirror and you say, "No, I'm fine, thanks." Or, "I'm not drinking," or, "I'll have a ballygown," gown, or whatever it is that you are comfortable saying over and over to people, because people push and they push. I go on. Ah, you will, you will, you will. Mrs. Doyle style, and it's just you have to keep saying, "No, that's okay. No, I'm fine, thanks. No, I'm not drinking," or even say, "I'm on antibiotics." Whatever you want to say, it doesn't matter. It's just to get them to stop pushing drink on you, because that's what Irish people do, and so it's and that's it, and it's the same kind of on a larger scale is preparing yourself for giving up the booze. So preparing for a night out is one thing, but then actually, "I don't drink," rather than "I have given up drinking." "I'm not a drinker anymore. That's not something I do." And so there's a lot of things. I've given up lots of things in my life. I give up smoking about 50 times. It was like, "Well, I can do it anytime I like. I've done it before." Just over and over, I gave up eating meat. I gave up lots of things. But it's that you just say, "I don't smoke. I don't drink." And so that takes time. Because the first week or two or whatever it is, the first couple of events, you're kind of still dipping your toe in the water. You're still, trying to build that identity in you and convincing yourself that you can do it. So,
Absolutely.
yeah, so definitely it is. It's about the affirmations and embodying. And, James Clear talks about this with the habits. It's not which habit do I want, it's what person do I want to be. I want to be a person who doesn't drink. I want to be a person who runs. I want to be a person who lifts weights. So in order to be that person, I have to do these things.
Oh, I
So I
love
guess
that.
you're just building that identity.
Absolutely. And it is incremental. I say that more than I say thank you. It's incremental changes, and that's the thing that I think a lot of people who I work with struggle with. It's that complete sentence, "I don't drink." And it reminded me there. So the book that I'm reading with Marissa Peer or whatever, she talks about, our brain, our imagination is the most powerful thing that we have. If I say to listeners now, go to your fridge, open up the fridge door, take out a lemon, slice the lemon, squeeze the lemon onto a teaspoon, put the lemon juice into your mouth. What does it taste like? You can imagine that, right? So your saliva, your glands, your salivary glands, whatever they're called, they will, you'll begin to salivate, right? Thinking of that. So, and you're only telling yourself a story. So you can very easily tell yourself a story. You could, like, let's just say the 40th that I was at, in a gorgeous, it was beautiful rural pub. So I could walk myself through that in terms of you're going to walk to the bar, you're going to get a Coke Zero, or you're going to get whatever you're going to get. You're going to come back, you're going to talk to your friends, you're going to get up and have a little dance, and then you're going to go home. So you walk yourself through it. So you're, I think, you've raised such a great point there. So if you don't see it, you can't be it. And the importance of visualization when we want to become a different version of ourselves, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Like your brain believes everything you tell it.
Yeah.
So if you tell it that you don't drink, then it will become embedded in it. And it's the same, because, those of us who have a problem with drinking or gray area drinkers, as you say, it's that we at one stage had the butterflies or the reddening of the cheeks or whatever, which I had too. And we reached for a drink and it alleviated it. So therefore, whenever we got that sentiment or feeling or whatever it was later on, it was like, oh, that worked before. I'm going to do that again. And you do it again and you do it again and you do it again. So what you have to then do is kind of reprogram almost and say, okay, when I get this feeling, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to do something else. And, a lot of these habits, they serve us when we adopt them. If you grow up in an abusive family, maybe you become disassociated or you go into freeze mode or you go into fawn mode or whatever it is. But eventually it doesn't serve you anymore because then when you come up against a stressful situation later in your life, you're in your job and you go into freeze mode when it gets stressful, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
So you then have to reprogram it. When you are in a stressful situation, you then have to reach for something else.
Yeah.
So,
And I think that's a
yeah.
really, really valid point as well. So, what are our stress responses? So, when we come up against a stressful situation, do we go into fight mode? Do we go into flight? Do we run away? Do we freeze? Or do we fawn? Like, does the people pleasing kind of, so it's about getting to know yourself. This is a very, very personal journey. Like, you begin to realize more about yourself than you've ever known. We might get back into that now in a minute. But so 3.5 years ago, your other half decided, right, I'm done. Right. And had there been a build up to that as a couple, right, we're kind of coming to the end of the road with the old wine.
Yeah, it had been a particularly boozy summer, lots and lots of parties, all that kind of thing, lots of visitors. And yeah, just he had been saying, oh God, and I have. When I drank, I used to have a lot of shame in the morning. Oh my God, did I talk too much? Did I laugh too loud? Was I annoying? Did I dance like an idiot? All of that kind of thing. And, even if I was the designated driver at, an all-day party and I had one glass of wine in the afternoon, I still would have that feeling in the morning. I would remember every single thing. I'd have one glass of wine at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and drove home at midnight or whatever, but I would still have that, oh my God, what happened? Did I do something? Was I annoying? Was I this? And it was so funny. It was like as soon as I stopped drinking, the switch flipped. I don't care anymore. It's like I laugh louder now. I talk more. I'm me because I'm like, actually, if you don't like me, that's your problem. This is me, and lots of people like me, and I like me. So that's more important. And so yeah, it's incredible. But Matt had felt that kind of building as well in him, and so he had been kind of talking about it, and then he just said, you know what, I've had enough to drink. That was it. And so it was amazing. It really, really was. Because for me, I suppose I'm a little bit of a sheep, and I guess that's why I got into drinking and all that. But him stopping was really amazing for me because then I was like, oh yeah, okay, maybe I'll give that a go too. And yeah, it was like a turning point. It really was. Yeah, I feel like it's like the before and after of my life. Yeah.
Me too.
So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's
And you
brilliant.
know, I just loved what you said there. It actually, a little tear formed. I've a self-acceptance, right? That's what you said. And it was like lots of people like me and I like me. Like that's what a journey. I mean, like everyone knows I'm very spiritual, and like anything that I read or that I embody or whatever, the kind of bottom line is, well, love is the only thing that really matters, but also self-love. So if we can learn to love ourselves, accept ourselves, and behave in a beautifully authentic way, and like this, and again, a common thread of the drinker is that drinker makes us small. It makes us feel like shite. It makes us hate ourselves, low self-loathing. You know, I'll often get DMs from people saying, you know, I was off it for 8 months and I had a bottle of wine last night and I'm raging. I can't believe I've done this to myself. And why am I so horrendous? And I hate, and you're like, calm down. But like, you know, the weekend before they were mad about themselves. So like it makes us small, it makes us hate ourselves, you know, all those kind of things. And removing it, you're able to seek more clearly, accept yourself, become the most authentic version of yourself. So like all these really deeply empowering traits then start to emerge, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah. It's incredible. It really is. Yeah, I feel like I've reclaimed me almost. You know, I started lifting weights, so it's like now my body is mine. I have complete control. It's like it's strong and it's healthy and there's nothing holding me back. And now I started sea swimming, which I'd never like in the cold water, which I'd never done before. And it's incredible. It's just like this kind of yeah, I'm not avoiding the disease anymore. You know, it's uncomfortable being, I was in Sandy Cove on Sunday, on Saturday. It's really cold. Like it's really cold. But actually being face to face with something that's so uncomfortable is something I would have avoided by drinking. So it's like, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
like so cold water immersion is incredible for dopamine. Like it's the one thing, like obviously we love a bit of dopamine for our former boozers, you know. So it raises it to the level that probably more so than it would have raised booze to, and it doesn't taper off as fast. So you are left with that gorgeous feeling for the whole day then in the Baltic Irish Sea. So what are the other things that have kind of emerged? You know, you were saying earlier before we started recording that even in your business life, like things have, you know, definitely
Absolutely,
improved.
yeah. I've been self-employed for about 10 years and, you know, always kind of plodding along and it was fine. But then last year I did the life coaching course, which was totally incredible. And just almost, you know, on a personal level, really, that I was able to work through so much of my stuff in order to help other people. You know, you can't help anyone else if you're not facing your own demons and your own issues. So that was absolutely incredible. And then the addiction coaching, I did career coaching as well. And hopefully, well, at the end of this month, I'll be doing parent coaching, which is what I really, really want to get into. So, and do workshops in the schools and all of that, which is great. But yeah, just being it, having more energy, having more focus, loving myself more. I'm able to put myself out there more in my business, and therefore I am more effective, and so I have more clients, which is amazing. And but I have four different jobs, so it's really nice. So I always have different income streams. So my business with the coaching is building very slowly, but that's totally fine with me. I'm happy for it to be an organic growth, and that then when the coaching gets busier, I will pull back from the other jobs, which is my goal. But yeah, it is. It's just, I feel like I'm, I don't know, better able to tap into my strengths and all of that in order to be a better employee, I suppose, or I work kind of work as a consultant, and so I'm better able to do my job, and therefore I get more work. So yeah, it's great.
And I'm sure if you're anything like me, if somebody would have told you 10 years ago that making one little change in your life and being the age that you are, like that it would make your life unbelievably better, you would have said, take a bus. What's the Dublin saying that people say? Take a bike, or get on your bike, whatever. On the boat, is that it? On the boat, get the boat. But like it literally does. And you know, I do get a lot of texts from people. I'm gonna listen to this on my walk on the way in an hour or whatever. And it's like, listen to this. You can guarantee, and I can guarantee that your life will unequivocally get much, much better when you stop drinking. That is not a lie. I've had 100 and whatever people on the podcast now at this stage. Every single person experiences. It's like being reborn, isn't it?
It totally is. Yeah. It's almost like getting a reset. You're able to go back to before and harness all of that power you had as a child and all of that strength and put it into practice and put it into the things that you love. Yeah.
Oh
It's
God.
really, really amazing.
And your husband then, Matt, is it? How has his life improved then?
Yeah, well, he's had a bit of a rough ride lately. He had to sell his business, and being in France, everything takes an awful long time with all the bureaucracy and everything. So he spent almost 2 years wrapping up his old business, and now he is starting a new business. He's buying a pottery shop here in the town we live in, which he's really, really excited about. So, but it's been amazing because it's been such a stressful 2 years. If we had been drinking, there's no way we would be at this amazing point right now. Like in between, he's been going to the gym, he's had problems with his back for years. So he went, he had scans, he had all kinds of things. He did months of physio and now has got a hold on it, has a set of exercises he does every single morning and hasn't had a pain in his back for months. And so all of these things that, like I was saying, you have more energy, you have more time, you have more focus on the things that you want to do. And so therefore you make it happen. And so it's been absolutely amazing. Yeah. So I'm so glad that we gave up the booze before this happened, because there's no way we would have come out of it as positively as we have.
Yeah, and
So
the consistency really pays off because you've nothing to hold you back. So there's no
no.
oh, dread, there's no hangovers, there's no fog, there's no self-loathing. It's just right, you're up and you're at it every single day. So you're in France, right? Ooh la la, the French like an ale, a glass of vino, right? How do they react to a non-drinker, or what's the crack in France? Like, what are they up to in terms of boozing?
Well, I think it's a little bit like in Ireland. The young people are drinking less. There's more gym and all that, more into their health and all that kind of thing, which is amazing. Like the French tend to drink in moderation. You
Okay.
know, they have a couple of glasses of wine with dinner, and if they get to when they get to the end of the meal, if there's still wine in the bottle, they put the cork back in and put it away. Do you know, they don't carry it over to the
Weirdos.
couch and exactly, finish it off and then open another bottle. Like they have wine with their dinner and that's it. You
Yeah.
know, it is very much like they do everything in moderation. And so it's unusual to see French people drunk.
Yeah,
So,
okay.
but they also don't understand people stopping drinking. So when we
Okay.
say, oh yeah, we don't drink alcohol, because for them, alcohol is spirits. So you say, oh, I don't drink alcohol. And they say, oh, not even beer. And it's like, no, not even beer. So, but they're just not into give it. Like we gave up meat, I don't know, 10 or 11 years ago. And so we say, we don't eat meat. And they're like, not even chicken. It's like, no, not even chicken.
So it's hard for them to kind of understand as well. And what about you and moderation? Did you try that? Was that a thing on your radar?
Yeah, absolutely. So COVID, obviously, you start drinking every evening because you have to have that, you have to have that, division between day and night because you're working from home. So how do you draw the line where you would have had your commute home from work or whatever it was, between daytime and nighttime? So you have a glass of wine, it's like close your laptop, get a glass of wine and sit down on the couch, and then you make dinner or whatever. And so it was kind of, it became an every night thing. It might only be a couple of drinks, but it was every night. And so after COVID, then we'd be like, okay, so we're not going to drink during the week. We'll only drink on the weekends. And then, Wednesday would come and you'd be like, oh, I have to go and, pick up one of the kids in town. Do you want to go for a drink while I'm waiting? Okay, we'll just go for one. And then, well, it's Wednesday, I might as well throw the towel in for this week. And then that was it. And so it became 2 days off the drink all the time. So yeah, that really didn't work. It really didn't work. So it was all or nothing. And it was the same with smoking. We had said, oh, we're only going to smoke when we go out. So then you end up going out every night. It's you're just looking for excuses. Oh, we're away for the weekend on a Tuesday, and so you can smoke now. So yeah, I'm just not good at that. Not with, definitely not with smoking or drinking. And so I just, it was better not to.
Yeah, and
So.
like when I work with people, it's like all or nothing. So like that's what they say, they're all or nothing with everything. They're that kind of no off switch as well. So like moderation, I suppose you need to get to know who you are really. And then if you're a moderate person, you are. If you're not, you're not. But like certainly for the gray area drinkers, like the no off switch, the middle of the road drinkers, it's never going to work. And I suppose it's the acceptance of that. And definitely we go through the stages of grief nearly, you're bargaining and you're like raging, you're in denial, and then the last kind of bit is it's acceptance. And it's like, right, okay, I accept that alcohol does not make my life any better. In fact, it actually makes it worse. So you know what? I'm going to become an adult. I'm going to be emotionally responsible, emotionally mature, and I'm going to not blame anybody else. And I'm going to do this for myself. I'm going to say, no, we're going to learn French before we go to France, right? So we're going to learn not boozing before we give up the boozing, or maybe when we give up the boozing. And all of those things you talked about there. So, like the affirmations, the stories we tell ourselves, the Quitlet books that we can do, the James Clear book, the Habits Stack. And the whatever we can do, finding a community, walking with podcasts, like really just making a decision, and like that's how we get there, and it's not, once it's just these tiny little incremental changes, and then voila, we're the best version of ourselves coming into the second part of our life or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's very funny. Like, I'm very moderate in all the rest of my life.
Okay.
I'm like in my eating, in my exercise, and I'm really consistent. But, I'm like, well, yeah, I have a bit of chocolate or I have a bit of that, or, but I just, it's all the time, just, the same kind of boring, same stuff in my habits, in my routine, all of that kind of thing. And so it's so funny that I just, with booze, it was all or nothing. And so it's just like, okay, that's fine. That's,
Okay,
yeah.
but it's like it's an addictive substance. So like it warrants that we drink more. So like it literally makes us want to drink more. I'm not sure if you had seven eggs, would you want to eat more eggs? Like eggs aren't addictive. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's a funny one. So look at Based on what you've learned over the last 3.5 years, based on how you're coaching people to give up booze and your experience, life experience as a human walking the earth, what would you say to somebody who's like on the fence or, has that kind of dream of moderation? I suppose maybe speak to them directly. What would you encourage them to do?
I would encourage them to give it a go.
Yeah.
So figure out how you want to stop because you do it on your terms. So be it that you choose a month when you don't have any social engagements. So you don't have to talk to anybody else about it. You just do it on your own at home and you figure out how you want to do it. Or you are better coming up against that wall and reaffirming yourself. So you say, okay, I'm going to go out all the time. I'm going to go out and see my friends. I'm going to go for lunches. I'm going to do all of these things so that I have to keep saying, no, I'm not drinking and keep practicing it. So, everybody finds their own way of doing it, but definitely that you fix in your head the best way for you to do it. I hate going to the gym, but I work out at home all the time. My husband loves to go to the gym. He won't work out at home. And so that's it. Everybody has a different way of building a habit and finding a way that works for them. So you figure out the way that works for you. Find someone to support you. It's really good to have someone to talk to about it. So be it a coach, be it a friend, be it your sister, whatever it is, but a person that you can talk to about it, because there are times when it's hard. And it's just nice to be able to pick up the phone and say, I'm finding it really hard. Give me a little pep talk, or can I talk about how it feels, or whatever it is, because it's really not easy. And
Yeah.
so that's what I would say, is just find the way that will work for you.
Yeah. And and get to know yourself a little bit. This thing of developing emotional literacy. So what am I feeling in my body? That reminded me of two times that I drank to really, now I drank to connect and to be mad. And actually I was at a mad party recently. And oh God, there was hundreds of people there. But it was amazing. And I get so giddy with people. Like I was shaken with the excitement of the people, right? And I was like, I love it. And I love crack and I love laughing and I love being a bit wild. So anyway, this is what this party felt like. And I know that if I had been drinking, I would have got so overexcited and overdrank, like by about a million, just because of the excitement, right? But so that's generally how I drank. But I'm just remembering two specific times, right? One where I was embroiled in a stressful, argumentative type situation with somebody at work, a vendor, let's say, who fucked me over, really. I'm talking about, oh God, about 10, 15 years ago. So I'm not a natural fighter, but he was a bollock. So I had to fight with him. And I was so stressed about fighting with somebody that I tried to go to the gym and then I just drank a bottle of wine. So that was to deal with the stress of that. And then another time we had moved into a new house and I thought it was haunted. And I had a lot of fear. And for me to go to sleep the first night, I had to drink a half a bottle of wine. So, like, there's two emotions that we're drinking on there. So fear, oh three. So well, I didn't drink with the excitement. So you might drink because you're excited. You might drink because you're afraid of ghosts. There's no ghost. Or you might drink
Everybody's
because,
afraid of ghosts, but it's just whether they think they're there or not.
well, exactly. Yeah. So fear, excitement, or stress. So, like, figure out why you're drinking. Are you drinking because, your house is haunted, or loneliness is a big one as well. So, we're just past Valentine's Day there. Well, like, were you sitting in by yourself and you drank a bottle of wine because there was nobody celebrating with you? Do you know what I mean? So, like, figure out the precursors, the stimulus, the trigger to the response that is drinking. So you respond to a trigger. What is that? And that's another. So there's 50 million reasons why we drink. We just need to start dissecting them like a little surgeon or whatever. Amazing. Okay, Sinead, let's wrap it up there. And I can't wait to go and visit you in France. It's going to be amazing. I'm joking. me and me, us
Now
with
that my kids are in far-flung places, we have two spare rooms, so yeah, bring
oh,
it
there you go. I
on.
love you. come here, just a little aside. Where are your kids? Are they doing traveling and stuff?
Yes, so my son is in Mexico doing his internship for the end of his degree, and my daughter's in Sydney on a year out. So,
Sydney, are you going over to visit her?
No, she's coming back in June. She only left in January, so she was in Spain
Okay.
first working on her Spanish. Then she came back, and then she went to Sri Lanka to volunteer with the sea turtles. And then she came home for Christmas, and then she went to Sydney in January. So she'll be back in June. But I'm helping my husband set up his pottery shop. So yeah, they'll be back. They'll be
Oh my
back. So
God,
that's
like
well.
I have a tear of jealousy there, but like what a life. Oh God, stunning,
No, it's
stunning.
amazing. It
Right.
is.
Sinead, where can people find you if they want to work with you, if they want to check in, connect, have a bit of crack, where can they find you?
Yes, so I have a website which is SineadAndersonCoaching.com,
Brilliant.
and I'm on Instagram, Sinead.Anderson.
Brilliant. Okay, and I leave all of these in the show notes. But I have loved this conversation. It's just been, we've done loads of gorgeous things in it. And thank you sincerely, and happy Monday.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Beautiful. No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed, and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.